This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. We have some breaking news at this hour. The Northport Police Department is currently searching for a one-year-old girl named Ava. She's described as white with brown hair and brown eyes. Ava was reported missing from her home this morning on the 8500 block of Alum Avenue and was last seen wearing a diaper. She's old enough to walk. Northport Police and the city of Northport have both tweeted out a picture of Ava. As of 1 p.m., both tweeted that they are still searching, but we're not asking for volunteers to aid in the search at this time. We will continue to update this story here on WGCU. In just a bit, we're going to get a big picture view of South Florida's water system from how water flowed before we built the dike around the Lake Okeechobee and started farming land south of that lake to today, when we're forced to release fertilizer and algae-laden water to the east and west, often causing horrible impacts along the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie rivers and into their estuaries. We'll also check in on long-term plans to someday store and hopefully clean enough of that water to reduce those releases. But first, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is the body that's tasked with managing the Herbert Hoover Dike around Lake Okeechobee, and they determine the water release schedule, which is necessitated by the lake's water level, the rainfall outlook, and just how much pressure the dike can withstand. The Corps resumed water releases on Friday after a short break. This time they're doing what are called pulse releases, which are intended to more closely mimic how water would flow from the lake following a big rain event. The idea is to start slow, speed up over time, and then slow down again before stopping. And we're joined now by John Campbell. He's the acting chief for the Corps' communications office in Jacksonville. John, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for your time today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
As always, we invite you to join our conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, John, what is the current lake level?
Today's lake level is 14.44. That's actually down just a little bit from 14.5 on Sunday. So we've identified a trend where we're starting to decrease. So the releases are having some desired effect, and I think it might not be as raining as much, at least over the lake, as it was previously in the two or three weeks leading up to this.
So how does that compare to what's average for this time of year every summer?
So what has been abnormal was the early start to the wet season at the end of May. That was historically wet. I believe the precipitation that we've received since then has been much closer to average. There was a span of time in the first half of June where we saw some fairly decent recession on the lake. We got back a quarter foot of storage, but then from June 22nd to just over the weekend, the lake rose again. We lost that quarter foot of storage and hit a new high for the year.
Can you explain to me a little bit what the pulse releases are? Is this a new thing, or is it something that you're able to do because it's not as critical?
No, so pulse releases we've implemented numerous times over the years. They have there's a little more publicity now because in 2016 we were releasing fairly large quantities of water, and then when we got into position, we were able to scale back. We designed a pulse release schedule that allowed for a couple days, especially to the east, to the St. Lucie Canal, of zero flows, and just the lower overall quantity and the pulsing of the discharges helped a little bit with the dispersion of the algae when it was present in 2016. So we're trying that. We're doing that again this year. We frequently pulse, especially at during low flow times. But we're doing it again this year again to help with to help exchange get a better exchange of some of the mixture of the water. As you know, an estuary is a mixture of salt water and fresh water, and by varying the flows on a daily basis, the belief is that there's a better mixing of some of the water that takes place.
And I'm wondering, when not you personally, but when the Army Corps of Engineers as a whole, is it when they're looking at whether or not to do these releases, is it 100% based on the level of the lake water, or do they take into consideration the condition of the water that they're sending out into these rivers?
The big consideration is the quantity of the water. So the Corps and the lake regulation schedule is heavily weighted toward the management of quantity of water. And this is not just limited to Lake Okeechobee. It's like that throughout the Central and Southern Florida project, which the Corps and the South Florida Water Management District operates. Being able to move water in South Florida is very key to the flood risk reduction that we all enjoy. This flood risk reduction system dates back to the 1940s after a hurricane came through and left much of South Florida underwater for a period of weeks and in some places months. And construction of that system in the 50s and 60s helped reduce the incidence of flooding. We've had historic rain events in 2016 and 2018, yet you've had very little reports, at least I'm not aware of many reports, where there was substantial property damage or any injuries or loss of life. And that's a great credit to the operation of this flood risk management system, which is present. That flood risk management system probably contributes a fair amount in terms of being able to sustain an economy that eventually allowed the population of South Florida to grow into the millions, 6 to 8 million people now calling South Florida home. So without that flood risk management system, I'm not sure South Florida looks the same as it does today.
Yeah, I'm wondering then, have you taken a look at any of the areas that have been impacted by the algae overgrowth?
Sure. I personally come down to Fort Myers on occasion and also have been to the lake and go to Stewart as well. So we are familiar with them, absolutely.
Is there, I mean, what do you think when you see that?
So I think it's a reflection of some of the challenges that not just the Corps, but as a society that we've got to embrace in terms of how we address water quality. And so the Corps of Engineers, unfortunately, to the dismay of many, doesn't have a lot of authority or are we resourced to do a lot in terms of water quality. We're certainly interested in using our limited resources to help be a part of the conversation and a part of the solution on water quality issues. But within the state of Florida, a lot of that responsibility falls with state agencies.
It's got to be kind of a tough situation because you're in a position as the Army Corps of Engineers where you have to relieve the water pressure on the dike in order to protect people from flood. But to do that, you have to be releasing this water out into rivers that ends up causing this algae.
And sure. And so, and I know your other guests are going to talk about some of the solutions that are in place, but certainly the Corps of Engineers and a lot of, much of South Florida is interested in replumbing the water management system in South Florida so that eventually more water goes south and that the amount of water that we release to the coastal estuaries east and west of Lake Okeechobee isn't in the same quantities, nor is it for as long duration as we do today. Those solutions are very expensive. They will take quite a while to build and construct, but when finished in a few years, they will offer water managers, our water managers, as well as the South Florida Water Management District staff, a lot more flexibility in how they manage water.
So let's talk a little bit about the Herbert Hoover Dyke. When was that first built?
The Herbert Hoover Dyke, the initial construction on it dates back to the 1930s. It was, again, another hurricane, series of hurricanes in this instance, came through South Florida. These were devastating hurricanes that claimed the lives of roughly 3,000 people that lived and worked around Lake Okeechobee. There were some minimal levees in place, but the storm surge from those levees overwhelmed them, causing massive flooding. And so the citizens of Florida at that time, through their duly elected representatives in Congress, authorized the Corps of Engineers to construct some levees south of Lake Okeechobee and near the city of Okeechobee. And then that hurricane in 1947 left much of South Florida underwater, as I mentioned earlier, not nearly the same loss of life, but certainly lots of impacts that Congress again authorized the Corps to make improvements to the dike and to other portions of the Central and Southern Florida system. And the dike as it's configured today, 143 miles of levee, was completed right around in the early 1960s.
So, and how? What's the condition of it? Is it in good shape? I know that we have had federal government putting money forward and the state putting money forward to shore up the Herbert Hoover Dyke. That's underway.
So the dyke still has a lot of work that we need to do on it. And certainly you're correct. Between the federal government and the state government, over the past decade, more than $1 billion, $1 billion with a B, dollars has been invested in rehabilitation of the dyke. We still estimate about another $700 million worth of activities to go. However, we just recently, through the supplemental appropriation that was passed by Congress in February of this year, Jacksonville District, the core district here in Florida, just learned within the last week that we're going to get $500 million of that to apply toward dyke rehabilitation. And that's enough funding that we are now publicly committing to finishing rehabilitation in 2022, whereas previously we'd been advertising 2025 as a completion date based on historical funding levels.
So we're looking at the Herbert Hoover Dyke being, you know, up to where a status that we want it to be at. Is that going to have any impact on the amount of water that that lake can hold? I think some people are hoping that's some sort of a silver bullet. From what I'm understanding, that doesn't mean that the lake's going to hold any additional water.
So that remains to be seen. And what we have committed to do is, as we undertake the remaining rehabilitation activities, is that we will conduct a study of the Lake Okeechobee Water Management Schedule, the Lake Okeechobee Regulation Schedule, as we commonly refer to it, concurrent with rehabilitation activities, so that when the dike is in a state where we believe we can implement changes to the water management scheme that we have currently in place, that we can do so at that time upon completion of rehabilitation. What we don't want to do is finish rehabilitation and then study a water management plan for another 2 or 3 years. We want to do that study concurrent with rehabilitation. As I'm sure you're aware, the calendar with the acceleration of rehabilitation of 2022, we've got a shrinking window, shall we say, to implement the start of this study. And some conversations are taking here in the halls of the Jacksonville District headquarters building in Jacksonville, regarding the composition of the project team that will soon start this Lake Okeechobee Regulation Schedule study. And hopefully either later this year or in early 2019, once we have a good funding source identified to pay for all this, we'll have a little more news to share on exactly how we will go about that study. Certainly, one thing that we know is the water management of water in the lake affects a lot of people, and a lot of people are interested. A lot of various groups are interested in how the water is managed, so we know there will be several opportunities for public input on this water management plan. But the degree of flexibility that we see, we can't say with certainty right now that we'll see from a rehabilitated dike in our water management plan.
Yeah, so it's unknown whether or not a rehabilitated dike is going to impact the amount of water that the lake's going to be able to hold, but you're wanting to hold a study concurrently to make sure before you give it a try. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, correct. Again, we don't think it makes sense to finish rehabilitation and then wait to implement any sort of change in water management for another 2 years while a study is ongoing. We want to be in a position where as soon as rehabilitation is done, we've already had that conversation publicly on a new water management plan so that we can implement it right away.
So part of the water management plan that we're hearing a lot about right now is the Everglades Agricultural Area, the reservoir project that was just recently approved. Can you tell me anything about that?
So that's a state project that I'm sure you're very aware was authorized through state legislation. The South Florida Water Management District undertook a study that they finalized in March of this year, submitted it. They used a segment of federal law that dates back about 30 years that allows what we would call a non-federal sponsor, but basically a non-federal entity to submit a proposal for a civil works project directly to the Secretary of the Army. So they bypass totally the Corps of Engineers and submit that directly to the Pentagon. The Secretary of the Army and the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works have conducted their reviews. The administration has just finished their review in the past week, and that document has now been transmitted to Congress, and it awaits congressional authorization in any Water Resources Development Act or any other legislative vehicle that Congress wants to use to authorize the project.
You know, it's interesting. There's about, I don't know, a dozen projects, it sounds like, underway from one way or the other, working north of the lake to try to divert water getting into it and then figuring out what to do when you get it out down the south. Then you also have the comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan that was passed back in 2000, allocated billions of dollars towards restoring the Everglades. That one's projected to be a 30-year plan. It's been revised to be a 50-year plan now. And at this time of year, you're going to have, you said, a lot of public input on any plans that you're going to be putting forward. Very few of those people are looking 30 to 50 years down the road. It's the public is kind of doesn't have a whole lot of patience when it comes to something like this. And so I wanted to ask you, if given the opportunity, what would be an ideal situation for the Army Corps of Engineers going forward to make things better more quickly?
Well, so that's a challenging question to answer without, outright lobbying for certain things to happen. So
well, maybe, it's hard not to get political.
Like to take a stab at it, but certainly, our ability to construct projects is directly proportional to the willingness of the funding streams that we're able to get. So at times, historically, when the federal government has invested money, this is a federal-state partnership, a 50-50 split on most of the projects. So at times when the federal government has been willing to make substantial investments, the state government hasn't been willing to do so. And I think now we're in a cycle where the state government seems to be more willing to make investments than the federal government. So getting alignment of all those interests would probably be helpful.
That would help move things a little bit more quickly?
Sure.
Well, that's all the time that we have for this part of the show, but I want to thank my guest, John Campbell. He's the acting chief for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Communications Office in Jacksonville. John, I really appreciate your being with us today.
Okay. Hey, thanks for the opportunity, and we will be in touch soon.
All right.